Solitaire Rose Novelcast, Do the Job, Part 2. Okay, it's been a while. I apologize for that. There are a number of reasons. Part of it is that the computer crashed. Part of it is that my job kind of went out of control in late October, early November, and then that lasted through all of November. The full-time job took up a lot of my time. And as I said in a blog posting that I also referenced on Twitter and put on Facebook, so if you're not following me on Facebook and Twitter and going over to the blog, please do so. It's where I put the news for pretty much anything I'm working on. When things go out of control, when I got a lot of hours to cover, the paying gig has to take precedence over the non-paying gig. And so far, this is a non-paying gig. Doesn't mean it's not important to me. Just means that there are times when it's got to take a little bit of a pause. However, work has calmed down. Other things have started to speed up, and Novelcast is back. Hopefully, be on the every 2 week schedule. It's the first week of December, actually the second day of December, so you might even get 3 episodes this month. What has gone before? The Lightning Kid, former pro wrestler, now private detective, has been asked to investigate the death of a fellow professional wrestler who had just gotten a gig as a trainer for the big national organization. After he got that gig a couple days before he was supposed to pack up and move to New York City, he died of a heroin overdose. Friend and the widow of the wrestler has asked the Lightning Kid to investigate, find out what happened. We pick up where the investigation begins. Chapter 2. It took a couple of days to free up the time to start work on Billy's case. I had to give some pictures to a woman that made her cry, and some information to a man that he wasn't expecting and should have made him happy. Instead, it made him think I wasn't doing my job, and he was sure I'd missed his wife's lover. The pay was good, but my mood remained the same as before. I was in a foul state of mind, and it took a lot of energy not to let it spill into everything I said and did. On the drive out to Eddie's training facility, I watched as the strip malls and fast food joints slowly fell aside to large stretches of cornfields and pasture land. The same thing was happening to the drive out to my house, but I knew that at the rate they were building, I'd be up to my neck in videotape rental stores, hair salons, and Christian bookstores in a few years. Fall was coming soon, and it was easy to tell by how the corn was losing the green in its leaves and becoming the dull brown of harvest time. Eddie had a farmhouse like mine, but his was more active than mine was. I'd sold off the actual land used for farming, but he had someone to take care of it for him, and use the barn for his training facility. The house itself was an old, sagging two-story job, was probably built around the same time as mine. He also had a storm shelter that he used for his wife's canning, a garage filled with old wrestling junk he called memorabilia, and a machine shed he converted into his real garage. He had his old pickup truck and trailer parked by the barn, so that if he had to load up the ring, he wouldn't have far to bring the parts. I drove up the gravel-covered driveway and saw that he had about 7 cars parked around the place, meaning he was running a training session. I parked and wished I could have just sat out on my porch and enjoyed the warm sunshine with a pitcher of gin gimlets and a couple old paperbacks, knowing there weren't a lot of these days left in the year. I was wearing a suit, not a cheap one at that. It was an expensive charcoal gray blazer, a matching vest, a white shirt with French cuffs, even though I had no idea why they were French, a tie the same color as a blazer, and tailored black slacks that cost more than my entire wardrobe had back when I was in the ring. I had a few suits like this now. I'd first bought one when I'd made our first pitch to a business to get their background check business, but I soon learned that they were just another tool to use in my line of work. Someone in a nice suit instantly screamed business at the top of their lungs, It also meant seriousness, competence, and all the other social clues that made people think that I was an expert at whatever I said I did. It was a costume, same as my ring tights, and I figured I'd need it today. The barn was in good repair, and I'd guessed it had been given a fresh coat of red paint within the last few years. The doors were in the back of the building, a small normal-sized door for people to walk through, and a huge double door that was probably used for bringing in equipment when it was being used as a barn. They were closed when I walked up, and I opened the smaller door and walked in. The barn was pretty standard on the inside, a large open area with a dirt floor and a ceiling that sagged with the weight of all the hay that had been baled and stored above all summer. The floor was a mix of dirt, hay, and straw, and there were bare bulbs at regular intervals in the ceiling. There was a wrestling ring set up in the middle of the barn, with Eddie sitting on a steel folding chair trying to look like he was paying attention to the seven muscular kids around the ring. Eddie was wearing a t-shirt he'd probably gotten free no sooner than 7 years ago, and those god-awful zebra print pants called Zubas. They were invented by weightlifters because if they worked out long and hard enough, their legs wouldn't fit into pants that were fitted to their waist. Sadly, they were now becoming the pants that fat, lazy guys wore. And while Eddie wasn't fat or lazy, he didn't give much of a damn about how he looked, and never had. Oddly, it was a mixed-gender group, with 5 men and 2 women around the ring, and in the ring was another woman who was solidly built, but couldn't have been more than 19. With her was a woman wrestler I'd known back when I was in the business. Katie had worked with her a lot when we wrestled locally. I couldn't remember her real name for the life of me. I knew she went by the name Plenty O'Toole in the ring. Why couldn't I remember? Simple. Most of us in the business just referred to each other by our ring names. The only people who used our given names were the obnoxious fans who wanted to seem like they knew about the business because they had a bit of insider information. Plenty was another redhead, and she was an attractive woman who also looked like she could beat the living shit out of you if you looked at her wrong. She was about the same height as Katie, but more muscular. She had her snarl on in the ring as she shouted, "Now if you can't pull off a decent bump, I'm going to start kicking your ass for real. Do it again!" The young woman looked as if she'd had cold water thrown on her. She moved to the far side of the ring and waited for Plenty to get into position. Plenty nodded, and the kid ran toward her. Plenty moved out of the way, and the kid shot across the ring, bounced off the ropes, and ran straight into a clothesline move from Plenty. She hit the mat, hard. But I watched to make sure she did the bump correct. She hit on the flat of her back, tucked her chin to her chest so that her head wouldn't hit the mat. If you don't tuck your chin, your head will hit the mat every time you fall down, which is pretty damn painful. It's bad enough to hit the mat, which is just thin canvas over a bed of plywood on a metal framework. But if you let your head do most of the hitting, you'll be in the corner throwing up at a bucket and dealing with a concussion. I know, since that's how I spent my first 2 days in the ring until I learned how to tuck my chin properly. "Better," Plenty said, a mischievous smile on her face. "Maybe you'll make it to the end of the day. Who's next, Eddie?" Eddie looked at the men and women around the ring and pointed to one of the men who looked as if he'd spent the last 5 years of his life in the weight room making himself into a tool for medical students to identify individual muscles. "Let Mr. Olympia take some bumps for a while," he barked in a raspy voice. "Good," Plenty said, the smile becoming more like a Bond villain than the Bond girl she'd been named after. "Mr. Steroid probably thinks he's tougher than me. Time for you to go to school, muscle-bound." She motioned to him with one hand, and as he climbed into the ring, the woman who'd been in the ring slid out onto the floor. As he started to step over the ropes, Plenty yelled, "Wipe your fucking boots on the mat! Show some respect, you big ape!" Eddie got up and came over to me. He was a short, wide man with a brillo pad of gray hair on the top of his wide head. He was shorter than me, but even in his faded t-shirt and loud pants, it was easy to tell he'd kept up his work in the gym as well. "Let's walk," he said as he went past me toward the door. I followed along, and we walked past the machine shed and ended up in an old wooden fence that was more for decoration than anything. He'd picked an area with trees that looked out over his pasture land. Off in the distance, I could see a few cows standing by the side of a creek that was surrounded by trees that were similar to the ones we were under. "I was surprised to get your call," he said, "especially with you wanting to talk about Mikey. There's not a lot to say." "I know," I said, "but Billy wants me to look into things, see if I can put together when he fell off the wagon and what caused it. You know, what kind of stuff cops don't care about." He didn't say anything for a while, and I kept quiet as well. I'd learned a lot of things since trading my tights for a private investigator license, but the one thing I already knew is that if you want people to talk, you keep your mouth shut. Eventually, they'll start talking just because the silence is uncomfortable. I don't know why he got back on the drugs, Lightning. I thought he was putting it all together. We were doing bang-up business here, as you can see. I got 8 kids in the latest class. I think 4 of them will make it through and get some work. The other 4? Who knows? Mr. Muscles in there thinks he's going to be the next Hulk Hogan, but he can't bump to save his life. He's shit on the microphone. He can't remember anything except what body part he's going to work in the gym that day. But then Brad might hire him anyway. Brad's workers are all sizzle and no steak. They look good on TV, but if it weren't for the slick production and national exposure, he wouldn't be able to put a single ass in the seats. He's selling crap to kids. Makes me sick. He looked over at me and said, I know what you're thinking, and no, I wasn't mad at Mikey for going in with Brad's group. Hell, I wish I could have gotten on, since the money he's paying out is crazy. He's got guys working 5 days a week, sometimes twice a day, so their paychecks are huge. Problem is, when we met with Brad out here on the farm, I shot my mouth off one too many times and blew it. Mikey, though, he treated it like a job audition without even knowing it was one, and he nailed it. He showed off how we train the kids, talked about how he could pick out talent, and named off about 7 guys he'd trained that Brad had in his federation. He even talked about how he was the one who guided you to the title in Rogers' federation when he had the book and got them the deal with that cable channel. And when Brad asked him about drugs, he gave that speech. The book was what they called the power to make the matches, decide who won and lost, and who would get pushed to the top of the card as a big star, or conversely, pushed down the card to be a curtain jerker in an opening match. The speech, I asked, guiding to the information I needed. Yeah, his, here's how drugs fucked up my life and how you can avoid them. Brad loved it. He's on network TV every month, so the last thing he needs is a big drug scandal. He thanked us both for our time and called Mikey a couple of days later. Mikey was damn happy, but he told me he wouldn't go if it would screw things up here. Funny thing is, I think he meant it. I think he would have turned down the golden ticket if I asked him to. I didn't, though. I told him I could get somebody else and I was happy for him. I thought if he really got some power there, I could pitch it to the kids that I knew one of Brad's road agents. They'd have a better chance of making it to the big federation. And the big son of a bitch had to go and die on us. I looked for a reaction and was surprised to see Eddie start to mist up. Eddie was one of the toughest guys in the business. Hell, I'd seen him break his leg in the ring and not only not show it, but finish the match. I keep thinking he must have wanted to celebrate making it to the big time. He was clean the whole time he worked here, and he worked here until the last 2 weeks before he, well, before he passed. He died 2 days before he was supposed to report to Brad's headquarters in Philly, and I swear to God he was clean every time he showed up here. I'd known him when he was on the stuff, and he was a different person. He was mean and angry, and no one wanted to be around him. It's not what he was like anymore. He was stupid, Eddie said, looking off in the distance. Just stupid. There's a big pile of money on the table, and he chose not to take it. First thing you're taught in the business is not to leave money on the table. We stood there a while in respectful silence. Eventually I broke it, asking, Are any of the students you have now ones he worked with? Nope, Eddie said, turning back to the barn. We were between groups. That's why he called Brad to drop by when he was running a show down in Iowa. We were finishing up the last group, and Mikey wanted to see if Brad wanted any of them. He didn't, of course, too green. He wanted them to get a couple of years under their belts so that they knew their way around a ring and wouldn't screw up a TV taping with a blown spot. We started walking back to the barn, and Eddie kept filling the silence. Strange thing is, I don't think Mikey had any idea that Brad would be interested in hiring him. He just wanted to get a tryout for the kids. His whole spiel was just about how he was, and he thought if he put himself over as a trainer, he'd get some of them hired. And that's why you shot your mouth off? Nah, Eddie said. He just asked me what I thought of how he did business, and I told him. I'm old-fashioned. I don't like how he does things. He's killing off the territories and make it all feel like comic books instead of a sport. He shrugged, the look of somebody who'd already given up, but didn't have the heart to tell himself he'd lost. When we walked back into the barn, the muscle-bound kid who'd been in the ring when we left was off away from the ring, throwing up in a big plastic 5-gallon bucket, while Plenty was leaning on the ring ropes, an evil smile on her face. That's why you need to tuck your chin, losers. Hit your head enough times and you'll be throwing up protein shakes. Who else wants to get in my ring and show me what they're made of? Eddie held up a hand and said, Everybody over here! The crew came over and stood in a semicircle around us. I got my first good look at them. They were all young. I knew they had to be at least 18 for Eddie to allow them to train, but they all looked like high school kids to me. High school kids who spent a lot of time in the gym nonetheless, but looking at them made me wonder if I ever looked that young when I first learned the business. Eddie said, This is the Lightning Kid. He worked for about 15 years in that ring you're all trying to get into. He won a world championship in the St. Paul Civic Center and packed the place for months, twice a month, rain, sleet, snow, or sun. People paid money to see him, and they didn't care if he was a face or a heel. As a face, they wanted to see him win, and as a heel, they wanted to see him lose. They wanted to see it so much, they paid their hard-earned money to sit in that shithole, bought warm beer to drink until he took to the ring. Tell him what happened at the end, champ. Eddie'd taken me by surprise, but it was clear to see why he'd asked me to talk. I looked at them all individually. One of the women, who still looked like a teenage girl in my eyes, looked at me the way only a teenage girl can. She looked me up and down with disdain, instantly sizing me up, dropping me into a stereotype, and then dismissing me as a stereotype she'd assigned to me. Thanks for the warning that I was going to be telling a bunch of tomato cans about the business, Eddie, I said. I doubt any of you see me in the ring. I retired 5 years ago because somebody screwed up. I was in the middle of a championship run, and I'd flipped from face to heel, and that caused the whole federation to explode. I'd been a face for years, but when I got the belt, I did a slow heel turn, and it pissed off the crowd so much they couldn't wait to see me lose. I'd come to the ring, and fans would throw anything that wasn't nailed down at me, and I tell you, I'm glad they had the seats in the Civic Center bolted to the floor, because they would have thrown them if they could. We were built into a match between me and the Destroyer, face we got from the St. Louis area, but we needed to build him up for a while, so I was taking on mid-card guys and laying them out to make me look unbeatable. I was in the ring with Colt Masters, and we put together a 20-minute match where I took a lot of hits from him for the first part of the match, but then powered up and slaughtered him for the last 3 minutes, which is exactly what I did when I was a face. The only difference was that I would cheat to get my first advantage when I was a heel to get the crowd to hate me. Son of a bitch knew how to draw heat, Eddie interjected. He'd cut a promo in the middle of the card about the fans were stupid for thinking he ever gave a damn about them. He'd see somebody wearing one of his old t-shirts, yell at the guy for giving him money he'd use on impressing the guy's girlfriend so he could sleep with her. It was brilliant stuff. Yep, the crowd wanted blood, but we weren't going to give it to him that night. We'd just get them all riled up to buy tickets for the next card. Anyway, Colt was supposed to give me a pile driver and pin me, but I'd throw a foot on the rope to stop the pin, and we'd start my comeback from there. So the ref told us it was time to start working toward the finish, and I let myself get caught. Colt picked me up, and I knew something was wrong. Secret of the pile driver is to make sure you're holding the other guy so that his head is above your knees. That way, when you drop to your knees, it looks like you're driving his head into the mat, but instead you're keeping your partner protected. It looks brutal when it's done right. I could tell I was too low, and I tapped Colt on the leg to let him know. I don't know what happened. If the crowd was too damn loud, or I didn't tap hard enough, or if the ref distracted him with the standard "you can't do that" gestures used to put over how devastating the move is. All I know is he didn't move me up and just dropped to his knees. The top of my head went to the mat, and everything went white. I just remember I had no idea what was going on, and the next thing I knew, they've got me in a neck brace and are taking me out on the backboard as the crowd was screaming. A lot of the workers from the back came out to protect me as they brought me back to the locker room. The doc tested me to see if I was all fucked up. I was. Couldn't feel my arms, couldn't feel my legs, couldn't move. Called an ambulance and rushed me to the hospital. I had 2 screwed up vertebrae in my neck, and for a couple of weeks they didn't know if I'd be able to walk again. Colt felt terrible, and while no one said anything, he was smart enough to know he needed to get back to St. Louis. I can walk. Most of the time I can't tell any difference, but if I type too long, I lose feeling in my right arm. If I jog, my legs go out after a while, so I can only walk or use one of those stationary bikes to do my cardio. I was done in the ring. If I take a bump wrong, I'm paralyzed. It was an accident. Accidents happen in the ring, but it's your job to make sure they don't happen. This isn't a competition, it's a partnership. Your job is to protect your partner, and it's his job to protect you. I know you want to get in there and show everything you can do, but that's not how you work. You make the other guy look good, you make the match look good, and you do it so you can both go out for a beer after the final bell rings for the night. I hadn't talked about what happened in the ring for a long time, and it felt good to get it out. The kids went from barely paying attention to me to looking at me the same way they looked at Eddie, the way you look at someone who knows what they're talking about. Eddie jumped in and said, "Colt screwed up and made it so we all lost money. When you got a hot feud, everybody makes money because the fans will pay to see the top guys. When the arena is full, the payouts are bigger. Your job is to protect each other, and the booker's job is to make sure that the fans give a shit about you. Now I want each of you to get in the ring and give me 30 good bumps." They stood there waiting for me to say something, and Eddie said, "Did I fucking stutter? Get in the ring and start bumping." All the kids scattered toward the ring, and seeing plenty staring at them, wiped their boots before getting in the ring. I'm sure they just did it out of fear that they'd been told it was tradition, but hell, I'd do it without the tradition. You walk to the ring with all sorts of dirt and crap on the floors of some of these crap holes we worked in, and you want to make sure you don't bring that stuff onto a mat you're going to be laying on for half the match. They all lined up and would, in turn, go to the middle of the ring and fall on their back. They seemed to have that part down pretty well, spreading their arms to spread out the impact, tucking their chins so they didn't smack the back of their heads on the mat, and popping up for the next one in line to do the same thing. I watched until Mr. Muscles did his first bump, seeing the back of his head bounce off the mat, and he had that glazed look in his eyes as he got up. I just knew he'd be using that bucket again sometime soon. As I watched, Plenty came over to me and said, "What did you two old-timers talk about?" "How fine your ass has gotten over the last couple of years," I said, still watching the ring. "Bullshit," she said, laughing. "I don't think Eddie could look at a woman's ass without wondering how he could get it to pay $10 to get into a seat." "All right, you win," I said. "Okay, you win," I said. I was asking him about Mikey. Billy wants me to put together a picture of why he did what he did for the widow. "Her name's Nancy," she said, still watching the ring. "I really hate how when someone's husband dies, they lose their name and identity. They become the widow Jones, who lives in the old house on the hill. Nancy's a hell of a woman, and I like that you're doing this for her. Mikey going out the way he did doesn't make any sense to me." "How did he seem to you after he got Brad's deal?" "I don't know. He was pretty excited, but I didn't work for Eddie until Mikey got the deal. He called me up and asked if I would come in and help Eddie train, and I jumped at it. Unless you get snapped up by Brad, no one's much using women in the business anymore, and I'm not the kind of woman that Brad wants. You see that skinny little blonde there? Like she eats a Tic Tac for breakfast, two for lunch, and then forgets dinner? That's what Brad likes. He likes them to look like models, be willing to spend most of their time by the side of the ring, but know how to work if he needs them to. He told me Eddie would need someone to help him with the training. Money sounded good, and I could finally get off the road. Since no one has a decent women's division, I've logged way too many damn miles the last few years. So I do this. Do a few of the upper Midwest indies, a couple part-time gigs to get by. Mikey told me he was going to try to throw some business Eddie's way and we'd be getting more students. It seemed fine to me, but other than the locker room, I didn't know him that well." "He loved your work," I said. "He loved my work with Katie. That was a little nut job. I haven't talked to her in a couple of years." I smiled and said, "She's good. The job suits her. She gets to run things, lord it over a couple of women, and is really getting into the whole computer thing. We're also fringe enough that she can let her punk flag fly. Girl knew how to wear ink," she said. "She's the first woman with tattoos who wasn't some biker chick I ever saw. But it's starting to be a thing, isn't it?" "Yeah," I said. I still wasn't sure about the whole tattoo thing. "They look good on her, but I come from a time where a woman with tattoos is a woman you cross the street to avoid. Katie, on the other hand, is a woman I cross the street to walk behind for the view. She still talks about the run you two put together. That was a hell of a good year." "Yep," she said, the grin returning to her face. "That view was incredible. I still think we should have main evented, since toward the end people were there just to see us. I didn't know the broad had it in her." "She still does," I said. "Those are the only pictures she has in the house from her time in the business." "She was only in the business 2 years before your injury got her to retire. She must think you're really something. By the way, like the suit. You look good filling it out for a retired guy," she said. "Half the kids here thought you were a money mark coming in to offer 'em big contracts. you weren't here about Mikey, I'd have had you run a rib on them, get them to make asses of themselves for a big-time contract." I laughed and agreed with her. One of the best-kept secrets in the business is how much the workers like to pull practical jokes or ribs on each other. Can't tell you how many guys who barely had enough talent to lay on the mat in an opening act still had their jobs because they knew how to pull a good rib on someone. We watched as Mr. Muscles did his next bump, when he hit the mat, his head hit first, making a sick thud. She winced as Yeti yelled, "Get up and shake it off!" The kid didn't move, and while Eddie didn't do anything, the other kids helped him to his feet and got him out of the ring. He stumbled over to a chair, and the tiny blonde Plenty had been talking about ran to get him a water bottle. Eddie didn't even get out of his chair and just said, "Back to bumping, you bastards!" To an outsider, it would seem pretty cruel to ignore what just seemed to be a huge injury, but that's not how the business works. There's a huge premium on being tough in the ring. One of the biggest things in a wrestling school is to see if guys can make it. If they get banged up, do they tough it out? Can they suck it up and keep going? If not, they won't last, because once you get on the road, you're always a bit banged up, sometimes a little worse than normal people would be if they were going in for a day of work, even a physical job like a warehouse or factory work. Mr. Muscle slowly came out of his daze and looked over at Eddie, who wasn't even paying attention to him as he was still watching the kids in the ring going through their routines. "Hey, you dirtbag! I just about knocked myself out doing those bumps." Eddie didn't even look at him as he said, "Then go home! If you can't bump, you can't work! You can't work, you're not worth my time!" "Fuck you and fuck wrestling," he said, standing up and brushing past me as he stormed out of the barn. If Eddie cared about the student dropping out of class, he sure didn't show it as he kept watching the kids bump. "One down," Plenty said. "He lasted about 2 days longer than I thought he would. He has a fine career ahead of him as a personal trainer who bitches about that pro wrestling bullshit," I said. It reminded me of my own run through Nick's school, where I was the only one who lasted all the way to the end, and as a reward I got to lose at his shows to pretty much everyone. I remember being mad I'd spent so much time learning the craft and the business, only to be a jobber and stare at the lights at every show. Doing the job, we called it. Making the star look good. Knowing when to take his big move and lay on the mat when the referee counted to three. Pin me and pay me. Eventually it got better, but back then it seemed like I'd never be anything but a job guy. I looked over at Plenty one last time before leaving. Her real name finally showed up in my brain, mostly because I wasn't thinking about it anymore. Sasha, which was a name I'd never heard before, and it surprised me I hadn't remembered it till then. "Hey, Lightning," she said as I started to turn to leave.
"Yeah?"
"When you put together what happened to Mikey, could you let me know?" she said. "I don't know if that's allowed or anything, but I'd like to know what happened. Mikey was a stand-up guy, and I'd like to think that they made a mistake or something. I just can't see him getting back on the junk. Eddie'd like to know, too. He won't admit it because he's stuck in the angry, stupid asshole stage of the grieving process. But they went back a long way. The only time he brings up Mikey's when he's talking about all the money he left on the table, which is a mortal sin in Eddie's eyes. But I can see he regrets the fact that they were mad at each other when he died." I nodded and said, "I'll ask Nancy when I give her my report. Don't sit by the phone for it, though. I got to do this between my other work, and there really isn't a rush on this one." It was truthful, but after I'd said it, it seemed callous and blunt. I had a bad habit of doing that when I was around people I trusted. I'd known Plenty for almost as long as I'd known Katie. She was in the business. I wasn't thinking before I spoke. Thankfully, she understood and nodded. I walked up, said my goodbyes to Eddie, who thanked me for dropping by, said a few nice things about Mikey, and had a look in his eye that made me think that if we kept talking, he might actually cry. As I left the barn, I wondered if he'd cried about Mikey's death. He was at the funeral, looking dour, but with Eddie, you never knew if he was holding an emotion or just showing the one he wanted you to see. He'd been in the business so long, I doubt he even knew how to show an honest emotion. I walked to my car and heard a female voice say, "Hey, Dan!" from over by the house. It was Eddie's wife, Linda, bringing out a load of laundry to hang on the line. The laundry was in a white plastic basket with a pile of wooden clothespins on top of what looked like a bunch of towels and sheets. She was wearing a simple blue polo shirt and blue jeans and looked so much like Eddie you could mistake him for cousins at first glance. "You here to tell the new kids about your time in the ring, Or did Eddie put you up for being a high-money talent scout? Neither, I said. I just wanted to ask him a few questions about Mikey. Her smile went away quickly, and she shook her head. It's a damn shame, she said. I was sure he was done with the junk. He just seemed so happy most of the time. I was sure that when he got the big contract, he'd be even happier, but... I don't know. You men and your business just confuses the hell out of me. What do you mean? I asked, coming over to help her hang up the sheets, towels, and socks. Must have been White's day. Did you know that Eddie didn't tell me the whole thing was fake until we'd been married for 6 years? It's not fake, I said patiently. I know, she said in a weary voice, as if she'd been corrected a million times before. Predetermined, not fake. Trust me, I see the kids leave here with bloody noses, bruises, and the rest. Still, he kept me in the dark about the business all through our dating. When we got married, and for 6 years after that. Any other wife would have left when she found out her husband had been lying to her for 9 years. The only reason I found out was when he got into that feud with Mikey, and I spent a month mad at him for fighting with someone who was over to our house to eat every other night and was the best man at our wedding. When I said I was going to drive over to Mikey's house and bring him here so they could work out their differences, he finally told me. I'm surprised I didn't beat him up myself when he told me. I guess I knew it without knowing it, since I always wondered why he wasn't as hurt when he got home, but I thought he was just able to recover from that crap quicker. You all must have been laughing yourself sick behind my back. No, I said, we don't laugh at people for not being smart to the business. It's just the way it is. We get it drilled into our head not to expose the business from the day we show up to get in a ring. It's the code, kind of like how a magician never reveals how he does his tricks. I doubt they laugh at the people who come to see them saw a woman in half or make a lion disappear. Yeah, well, still made me feel like I'd been had. What brings you by? I haven't seen you in years, she said. Felt bad about that. I didn't want to be one of those people who'd leave a job and say they will keep in touch, but then never does. I loved the business, and the people in the business were the best people I'd ever known. Eddie was a billy goat through and through, but he wasn't a bastard about it. He was just a gruff old son of a bitch, even when we were both a lot younger. His wife was a tough farm wife who probably didn't have a dainty bone in her body, but was still a hell of a woman, and Eddie was lucky enough to have found her. Kate was like that in some ways, but she could also be incredibly girly, what with her going to the nail salon every few weeks, spending far too much time on her makeup and the like. She balanced it out with being genuinely tough, was able to take charge of just about any situation quickly, and she didn't put up with a lot of crap. Just like Linda. I'm working, I said with a bit of embarrassment. Been hired to put together an idea of why Mikey fell off the wagon. Linda, who'd been showing off her angry side as she went over how she was still mad about something almost 10 years gone, missed it up with a speed that didn't help me contain my own emotions. It's terrible, isn't it? Last time he and Eddie talked, they were yelling at each other. He won't tell me why, but I think he was mad that Mikey couldn't bring him on. They stayed out in that barn and yelled at each other so loud I could hear their voices over the TV, and when Mikey left, he tore out of here like a bat out of hell. Eddie stormed in the house and just sat in his chair for hours. 2 days later, we got the call. Eddie looked like he'd lost a brother. He did, I said. I guess, she said, wiping away a couple of errant tears. Eddie thought that he was owed that job, but Mikey tried telling him that he'd screwed up in front of Brad, and Brad thought he was more trouble than help. I didn't hear what they were saying, but I know Eddie's side of it. Eddie spent a couple of days after the funeral talking about it. Oh, he didn't sit down with me and spell it all out, but he'd say something here or there, and I pieced it together. That was the only fight they had? Yes, she said, and then corrected herself. Well, they got into it plenty heated when Eddie had to go to Hodge to bail us out. Mikey never liked Hodge and accused him of some horrible things, but Hodge is the one who put together the sharecroppers with us, gave us the money to keep the house running, handles all the taxes and stuff. Yeah, he does the same thing for us. He handles the payroll and taxes and stuff, and in return we give him a certain amount of money based on how well we do. I don't understand it, but he's the money behind the business, even though he's just listed as a contractor for the HR stuff. Same thing with us, she said. I don't pretend to understand it. Eddie says he does, but as long as the checks don't bounce, I don't much care how the thing runs. We get money from the farmland, money from the wrestling school. It's enough to make the bills, so I don't worry about it. Still, when the bank almost foreclosed on it, it changed Eddie. He's always worried about money now. She looked down at her basket of laundry, still on the ground and only half on the line, and said, Here I'm just blathering on like some senile old woman. You don't care about our problems. I reached out and touched her on the shoulder. No, I do care. I'm sorry I haven't been around much. The job gets to be plenty busy, and she got a thoughtful look on her face and said, You miss it, don't you? You miss getting in that ring and having the crowd go crazy because of something you said or did, don't you? Yeah, I said, I do. But the doc says I can't, so... So, she said, almost as if it were a period in a sentence I didn't want her to finish. We stood for a moment, not uncomfortably. We didn't need to fill the silence with a lot of words. We'd known each other since she started coming around with Eddie. Like I said, Eddie was lucky to have found her. He was also a bastard for keeping her in the dark so long about what he did. What is it with us where we feel the need to keep things from the people in our lives? Are we scared they will see through all our petty bullshit? When we do, they'll quietly tell us they were mistaken and take their leave of us? Will it confirm all of our dead-of-night thoughts that we're a secret fraud, and we have them fooled by the dazzle, the lights, the promos, and the big loud noises we make? I won't be gone that long again, I said, and I meant it. Good, she said. Eddie will never say it, but he misses you. We all do. And we're proud of you, too. I read in the paper when you do something good for someone, it makes me feel good about all of us. I thanked her and walked slowly to the car. By the barn, I saw Plenty smoking next to the smaller door, lost in thought. I waved at her and she waved back, her face breaking into that big grin that completely changed how she looked. There for a second, she wasn't the tough broad who beat up young kids to get them ready to take bumps in the ring. She was a kid who'd spent too many nights getting drunk with the workers. She was a young woman who would arm wrestle Katie to see who would win their next match. She was a woman who was amazed that a little girl would want her autograph, say she wanted to be just like her when she grew up. And there you go. There's part two. Part three will be coming in 2 weeks. Next week is the first episode of the new Solitaire Rose series, Solitaire Rose series in review, where we're starting to go over Master of Kung Fu. This will be a part of Solitaire Rose Radio. Remember that every Monday is Crazy Comics and Stories. That's a separate feed, crazycomics.solitairerose.com. And Solitaire Rose Radio is over at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Every episode of every podcast I do has ads. Here they are. Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest-running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com, use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you gotta shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC, get you some blades, they're wonderful. I use them. I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors. Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and DreamHost. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank the people who've been sending me feedback. I really appreciate the feedback. The more feedback I get, the better I feel I could do because, you know, I'm ready to correct things. I'm ready to fix things, ready to try and make things better. Some updates on the book projects. It looks like worldwide news. The first volume will be out before the end of the year. And once Dan has that secured and in his possession, we will have it in the ad section so you can email him and buy a copy or go to the website and buy a copy. The ebooks of the first two novels will be coming early next year. I really need time to learn how to put these ebooks together, and I have not had the time, but hopefully I'm going to get a couple of days of freedom where I could just sit down and read through what I need to read through and figure out what I need to figure out. I want to thank everybody for their patience. And again, if you want to help the podcast, tell everyone you've ever met in your whole entire life about it. Retweet, share, join the Facebook page, talk about it and let me know what you think. I really appreciate the feedback, and I really appreciate when you guys let me know what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. I'll be back in 2 weeks with part 3 of Do the Job.